CliffCentral.com.
All right. Good morning, CliffCentral.com. Friday, it's the 16th of April. And we are stuck in that month where all the public holidays are. But I've got bad news. The 1st of May is a Saturday, which means Workers' Day, no bonus holidays. But you do get the 27th of April, which is in the middle of the week. It's one of those annoying ones that doesn't fall near a weekend. So you get to either, you know, if you're lucky enough, you can maybe get some time off and ask your boss to let you have an extra day or two, or you're going to have to just mess around in that middle of the week situation. In fact, I'm just looking at it now. The 27th is a Tuesday. So there's no point in coming to work on that Monday, right? Should we also take the day off? What do you think? Have a long weekend?
I think so. I don't think we should suffer.
I don't think we should suffer. I think we can, yeah, let's not suffer. I think let's, we're having a board meeting right now. So Sia and Leanne and I are the board of the Gareth Cliff Show, and we've just decided that we're not going to be doing that show on the 26th.
Do we need someone from HR involved? What does corporate do?
No.
Talk to
it's, HR. Who else is involved?
You the board and, decides.
It's you, me, Leanne. And Simpiwe, and if we've decided, Simpiwe, you can just give us your vote by just send me a WhatsApp now. If you give me the thumbs up, Simpiwe, then we don't work on Monday the 26th. And then as soon as she's given her go ahead, then we're sorted, guys. Don't even worry. Then it's done.
So that's not next week. That's the following week.
26th, yeah, Monday the 26th. Because I don't think, Sia, we don't have to record a TV show on that day because we're going to be doing it on Wednesday next week, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see why we should suffer, as Leanne says, punish ourselves. Oh, Simpiwe's just sent me
you know what
thumbs
happens
up, so,
anyway.
Yeah, no, she says she's in.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
You know what happens anyway is we wake up early just by default.
All right.
We think we're going to lie in until 9.
So I want to hear about sexsomnia, but before we get to that, let's just finish our discussion of The Bachelor. I don't know what's going on here. Carl is one of the listeners. He just sent us a message to say, Leanne, what is happening with The Bachelor? And apparently he came out as gay, but the whole Bachelor show is about like trying to hook him up with a girl. So, I mean, but don't they have a gay Bachelor as well?
No, they don't.
Oh, I thought they did.
But yeah,
no, that's a different series.
Explain, about this Bachelor. And I suppose it's already, is it spoiled for me or which Bachelor
no,
is
not
it?
Part of the, it's not part of the series. It happened all after the show. It's Colton. Yeah. It's Colton Underwood.
Okay.
And he was from a few seasons ago. So that's why I think like we discussed this a year ago, maybe, or
he was
2 years
virgin.
Ago. Yeah. The Virgin Bachelor. And that's why a lot of people started going like, wait a minute, how are you here? And then you're going to be part of the show and you're a virgin. Anyway, they concluded the season and he's been in the news here and there. But this week he did an interview with Good Morning America's sit down where he said, actually, I'm gay. And a lot of people are kind of just like, nah.
Don't you find like these days, I mean, it used to be like a big deal in the 80s and 90s when someone came out. You're like, wow, I didn't know that. Like George Michael, wow, you know. Now, I think like most people are just, they could care less. I mean, this guy, it's more of a thing that he was a virgin, if you ask me. That's way more like of a surprise.
Yeah.
That someone, I mean, someone in America in their, what was he, late 20s or mid 20s?
Yeah, he's so I think 28 right now.
28.
If there's this whole
you can get
belief.
To 28 with being a virgin. That's then you definitely, that makes you stick out a lot more than being gay.
See, so then I have to squint at the story and go, was he a virgin?
Oh,
or was
right.
he just a virgin when it comes to girls?
Okay.
Because technically, that means I'll forever be a virgin.
Yeah, you can go around wearing whites here without ever having to worry about it. You're being honest to yourself.
I'm still saintly and pure.
So what did you want to say, Nian?
There's this thing that... it's just a conspiracy theory, really, that some men go on to The Bachelor just to prove to their family that they're not gay.
Really?
Those who still feel stigmatized and I don't want to come out. So there is that. But, that's interesting about Colton. But to explain to you what The Bachelor Nation is, it's just a group of super fans of both The Bachelor and The Bachelorette and – The, you know, we if we could, we would get together and have watch parties. You dress up for the cocktail evenings. You know all the terminology like hometowns and all of that sort of thing. So I wouldn't say I'm diehard in that way, especially because I battle to remember people's names. But I certainly know quite a bit about the shows, and I do watch all the American ones and now the Australian ones too.
All right, Leanne, I think that's a great explanation for someone who doesn't know what Bachelor Nation is. Thank you. Carl, by the way, who asked that question, says, I wouldn't watch The Bachelor if it was the only thing that would save my daughter's life. I saw an article on this.
Wow. So,
but it is something.
He's a very good-looking man, though. It is.
We have spoken about the Bachelor a lot on this show, so I'm not surprised. Even though Leanne and Sia would come on and talk about it, and I never managed to see a single episode in time, so I felt kind of stupid when they talked about stuff.
Well, Carl, also get ready to roll your eyes even more, because there are whispers that this Carlton guy is going to further get another reality show with Netflix to chronicle his life now as a gay man. So they sort of say this will be his gay guide to life.
You know what this is? We've all been hoodwinked. We've all been, this is a bullshit story. What's happened here is that this guy knew from the beginning, and there was a rollout plan. Like, what he's going to do is he's going to come out on TV, and then they're going to make the show about his journey, right? And then after that, they're going to have the first gay bachelor, watch. And it's going to be like him and a whole bunch of guys. And it's going to be another show that they can make huge amounts of money off of. Well done. Who is it? Who does the show? ABC? Which network is it?
ABC and then Netflix.
Congratulations. Which show was he on when he announced that he was gay? ABC? Was it on
Good
ABC?
Good Morning America.
Right. Thank you. So this whole thing, we've all been bullshitted here. This is a big, I mean, he probably, well done, Colton.
What
well
is done. The gay guy going to be like, who RuPaul is, and then take him to the mall? Come on. Aren't we better
they're gonna
than
put
this?
They're going to put him in front of a screen, put on like a special visor thingy, and, you know, flash images at a rapid rate to engay him.
Peter,
so
Peter
that he's
says,
caught up with everything gay.
Peter says, get off this trash. And Carl is really defending his reputation. He says, do not mistake me for a super fan of The Bachelor or even an ordinary fan. I have a reputation. Okay. All right. Calm
nope.
down.
Sorry, Carl.
Carl, you've ruined
mentioned it.
You brought it up. You brought it up, dude. All right. So, Leanne, what is sexsomnia?
Ooh.
So, this is, I thought it was a normal thing because it happened to me. It's happened to me many times before.
Yeah.
And I thought that it was just what everyone did. So I'm hoping that you guys maybe agree. But it's a condition where you either initiate sex during the night while you're sleeping.
Yeah.
Or you partake in sex. And you're technically asleep through the whole thing. And you wake up in the morning and you think, did we not? Was that a dream? Or did we in the middle of the night get up to some hanky-panky? Have you not had that before?
You mean where you don't even know if you had sex or not?
No, so in the middle of the night, you wake up and you feel there's someone next to you and you start playing around.
Leanne,
and you end up having sex.
This would necessitate that you went to sleep with someone, not some stranger crawled into your bed while you were asleep, right?
Please remember with kindness that I was not always single. In fact, for most of my life, I've had someone lying next to me in my bed.
All right.
As both a married woman and not as a married woman. So, yes, I'm talking about when you go to bed with your partner next to you and in the middle of the night, you either initiate sex or they do and you end up having full-on sex, but you're asleep through the whole thing.
Can't say.
And the next day you don't know if it. I really thought it was just I thought it was just normal, but yes, sexsomnia is a thing.
I can't say I've ever experienced that. I mean, I'm usually conscious. In fact, I've always been conscious when I have been engaged in sexual activity. So I do not know. I don't know how it's possible. Like, and you forget the next day. You're like, did this happen or didn't it? No, surely not. I mean, you'd have to be, I think you would have to be fairly drunk or high to not remember?
Well, that's one of the things is the person who's written this article about being somebody who suffers, they say suffers, I don't know if it's a suffering thing, who has sexsomnia, they either had been working really hard and they were really overworked and tired in weeks leading up to it, right. or they'd had alcohol or, you know, foods that don't digest well and you don't end up sleeping so well. So perhaps I should look up maybe the prevalence of sexsomnia.
Yeah, it can't be a very prevalent
thing. And then I don't mean to be crass, but I would assume this is more common amongst women than men because there's more.
No, it's actually more men. Statistically, it's more men. I did read that in the article.
Because I would have thought there's more work that a man has to do in an engagement like that than a woman.
No, it ends up feeling like it was a...
If you have not subscribed to our YouTube channel and you only listen to the podcast, you usually get everything that we do on the show because we try not to make it a visual show. But if you, in the last 5 minutes, weren't watching the show on YouTube, you missed out on Sia's hand gestures to explain penises and vaginas, which was hilarious because you know how Sia is quite prudish about these things. He did not enjoy that process of doing the hand gestures.
Well, there's, you know, for the man, it's a lot of this. For the woman, it's just a lot of that. So I would feel like if like you're the not conscious, you could just do this and then you don't remember. But to do that and don't remember, that's a lot of work.
I just like your hand gestures, Sia. That's all. I think that's hilarious.
That's me now. I don't know anything else. You guys have both muted yourselves somehow.
Well, we
just to let you know.
I moved my microphone.
I did it on purpose because I wanted you to keep explaining until you were embarrassed.
So I've got some statistics.
No, I'm done now.
Sexsomnia in a 2010 study in Texas was reported by almost 8% of patients at a sleep disorders center. Okay. So of people who already probably have a sleep disorder.
Okay, so 8% of the people with sleep disorders, it's a tiny number of people because I don't think, you know, there are a huge number of people with sleep disorders. Many people have insomnia of some kind, but it's not serious.
The prevalence of reported sexsomnia was nearly three times higher in men at 11% than women at 4%.
Okay.
And it's all about initiating or engaging in sexual activity with a bed partner while asleep.
Well,
I did that so many times.
And
oh,
you're out of the three of us. Out of the three of us, you're the only one who can vouch for that. So I don't know. See, to me, conscious sex really is preferable. Like, what the hell's the point of sex if you're not awake and conscious?
No, I can actually attest to the opposite.
Really?
This half awake, half asleep, dreamy.
Really?
Like I'm having a sex dream type scenario is actually a lot more exciting.
Okay.
It was amazing when it happened. So they say people who experience this generally have symptoms of insomnia, fatigue, and depression, and other sleep disorders. Both groups also had similar rates of smoking and caffeine consumptions. And then there were also the admission to using illicit drugs. Okay, that wasn't my thing when it was this thing. But yeah, okay.
The closest I've gotten to that is thinking I was at my place alone in bed, so then I let out a fart in the middle of the night. Little did I know, then I woke up and remembered there was a guy there. Long story short, that was the last time I saw him.
Have you seen that clip of, I mean, it's old.
No, by my decision, by the way, not.
There's that old clip of that woman who, the guy goes and fetches her at the door and he opens the door of the car for her and she gets in and as she sits down, she goes, and she lets out this enormous fart, and then he gets in and he looks at her, and she looks at him, and then the parents are in the back seat, and they've heard her let loose on this huge fart. I mean, it's just, you know, so yeah, that's kind of what happened to you.
That's horrible.
Any exciting plans for the weekend, you two?
Oh. You know, I wish life was that exciting at the moment. My mom said to us yesterday, she said, you know, you guys never take me out anymore. And I said, Mom, I must just tell you, we aren't going out.
She's feeling
the last time I went to a restaurant was 9 months ago type thing, you know? So don't think that you're just sitting at home alone with kids who don't love you and aren't taking you out for lunches. We're not doing that either.
Yeah, but maybe it's time you do.
Well, I'd be happy to, but it just doesn't feel like life is working out that way at the moment. You know, I'm not getting many people saying, hey, we're going out for lunch. I know you did recently, Gareth. But it's just like, it's not a common thing at the moment, you know. Oh. I'm not against it.
Okay. I got you. You just admitted that you don't have a lot of friends.
I have no friends.
Yeah.
Exactly. Norman, no mates.
Oh, no.
All right.
What are you doing this weekend, Gareth?
I haven't decided yet. I've got that wedding on Saturday, which I'm excited about. That'll be fun. And otherwise, as little as possible, but we'll see. I mean, it might be a really nice wedding. I'm holding thumbs that it'll be like a, you know, weddings before COVID, and people will just be relaxed and happy, and we could celebrate in the right way. And I'll see
everyone kissing and hugging.
Yeah, I'll see a bunch of my friends who I haven't seen for a while. So I'm looking forward to that. It'll be nice.
Is the wedding in town, or is it one of those like on the outskirts of town?
No, it's not in town. Unfortunately,
have to carry some butt gorse to leave.
Yeah, it's a way out of town, which means you either have to have a place to stay, or you have to leave early, or you have to Uber, and you know, it's complicated. I mean, I do wish that people. It's not far, far out of town. It's like a little drive, but I do wish people would just think about that, especially since. Since COVID, I know a lot of the best wedding venues aren't exactly in town, but, you know, people have to make so many plans and arrangements when it's not close, when it's far away, especially if it's like in another province or whatever. You have to find a place to stay. You have to, there are costs involved, and I'm not complaining, by the way. This is not the case with this wedding, but I have been to weddings before where you really have to make a huge effort to get there. And some of that is very complicated. And of course, with the curfews, it makes it even more complicated. So you would leave a wedding whenever you'd had enough. And it might be at 10 o'clock at night, or it might be at 1 in the morning. And with this arrangement, you have to plan all of that in advance. And you have to know that the curfew comes at, so if you don't have your Uber by 11, you could be in trouble, blah, blah, blah. So there's a lot of thinking that has to go into it, but I think it'll be fun. I'm not
even 11.
Yeah, probably earlier than that. I think maybe even 10 to be safe.
I'm sure that the wedding venue is already kicking you out at 10.
Here's something interesting. This is from Pihleng, who's listened to us for a long time. Guys, I was listening via the app, but the topics forced me here. He wanted to see your hand gestures, Sia. I regret not opting for this from the start. Pihleng, we're always trying to give people options, you know. So if you prefer it, and by the way, while we're on that subject, just go along and like and subscribe. We would appreciate the likes and the follows. It obviously helps us to market the show and to get more people involved. And I want this thing to grow nicely. Otherwise, what's the point, right? I mean, we want.
Hey guys, welcome back to my channel.
That's right.
Be sure to like and subscribe and turn on the notifications bell so that you don't miss any new content.
There we go. You're a professional. This is what you do. Leanne Moll, everybody. So thank God for her, or we wouldn't be a professional show.
Leanne, do you watch more YouTube than you do normal series and TV?
Yeah, she does. I'm sure.
For me to get through my daily YouTube feed probably takes about 2 hours.
Sure.
But that, if you think about it, means only watching 4 episodes of something on TV. So I'd say I actually spend more time watching TV in inverted commas.
And are you subscribed to a lot of different things on YouTube?
Yeah, hundreds of channels.
Okay.
Oh.
I suppose you can also, you know, with YouTube, you can just, you can skip the intro, or you can go to the middle of it, or you can just skip the whole episode altogether and go to the next one. That's kind of nice. You know, TV, it's even though they've now made it possible for you to fast forward and rewind and with the touch of a button move from episode to episode, it just feels like it's easier on your phone.
Time codes are such a saving grace, and that's why as well we've decided to add time codes for our videos here as well.
Oh yes, you can do that, by the way. If you go to cliffcentral.com, you can see from yesterday's show or the day before exactly when certain things happened. So if you only want to hear a certain part of the show, I mean, screw you, we're sitting here working for 2 hours, but if you really don't want to sit through the whole thing, go to the time codes.
Like all of the several messages we received when Simi Aref was on the show, and people just wanted to cut straight to the moment when a lady in his apartment walked behind him while he was on camera,
and she only had
just a bin,
and she had nothing but a G-string and lots of ass. That's all that we remembered. It was so great, and Simi had no idea this was going on behind him. It was hilarious. All right, while we're talking about things that are happening on the 80s show today, that is the 80s show with Paolo and Dori, they will be playing Angry Songs. I don't know if that's to some people that would be a plus, to some people that would put them off. Dori tells us about possibly the worst movie ever made, in her opinion, plus 80s movie drag bingo and why DMX loved the Golden Girls. That's worth listening for. That's on that 80s show today. Very nice.
What are angry songs like Alanis Morissette?
Yeah, you ought to know. But that, you see, that's 90s. That's not 80s. So I want to know which songs in the 80s. Because the 80s wasn't really an angry time. But I'm maybe
wasn't
just...
Wasn't Jagged Little Pill in the 80s?
90s.
No.
Oh.
1997, if I remember rightly.
Sorry, anything pre Me Baby One More Time is the...
All right, Sia, you've got some news on Borat and the Borat 2 movie. Apparently, there's an extended cut with shocking scenes that we haven't seen before. The stuff they didn't let you see at the beginning.
Yeah, my goodness. If you are concerned about cancel culture and people having to be so politically correct, Sacha Baron Cohen is clearly not abiding by that at all.
Doesn't care.
For those of you who've watched the new Borat, look, you might have enjoyed it, and you know already there were like some shocking moments there, but there is now going to be a new special, and I'm going to take a deep breath for this title. It will be called Borat Supplemental Reportings Retrieved from Floor of Stable Containing Editing Machine. I don't know why, but that's the title.
I love it.
And that will just be a lot of different things that they, I assume, planned to have in the Borat 2 movie, but clearly just went over time. But they now just want to release it for the sake of viewers getting to enjoy it. It's some scenes like as Sacha Baron Cohen disguised as a country musician, performing a song called Wuhan Flu at a rally. Then the crowd just is not happy with him. He has to run and duck in a van. People throw things at him, and you know, they almost break windows of this van that he's hiding in. Beautiful. So there's just a lot of mess and chaos and violence.
I love
it. If Borat is your thing, then you should look out for this.
Well done, Borat. Well done, Sacha Baron Cohen. I do love the fact that he just doesn't give a shit. He's in it for the long run. He's unafraid of making people upset. Good for him.
Borat Supplemental Reportings Retrieved from Floor of Stable Containing Editing Machine. I don't know what you're going to Google to find it, but find it.
That's great. Just by the way, we were talking about the time codes that we're putting on the Gareth Cliff show from now on, so that if you want to watch the YouTube videos and skip to wherever you're looking for a particular thing, you can find it. Another thing we're doing is Blind History, which started this week. We're actually including a supplemental reading list. So if you want to actually go and read more, if you liked the episode this week, which was Al Capone, then what we've done is we've listed a bunch of the sources that Anthony and I have used in putting the episodes together, because we've had a lot of people requesting to know, you know, they want to know more about a particular person from Blind History or whatever. And now you can go and find our reading list also on cliffcentral.com. See, we keep on, see how hard we work for you. You see how much we do?
And then you have the audacity to just jump and go to a particular time code.
Tremaine has got some useful information. I love this because I never need to ask a question twice or worry about if I've said something wrong that it's not going to be corrected. We've got very smart people who listen to us here. If I was doing this on normal radio, where, you know, you basically have like sheep and cattle and goats and nobody really knows what the hell's going on. Our listeners are smart. So Tremaine says Jagged Little Pill came out in 1995 under Madonna's then Maverick Record Company. See? Thank you, Tremaine.
Oh.
You never need to ask twice on this show. You're going to get all the information you need. All right. What is Elon Musk's Starlink? And what? Why should we be excited that it's coming here in 2022?
Well, apart from the fact that this is just Elon Musk being Elon Musk, but Starlink is essentially satellite internet services.
Yes.
And specifically, the main agenda with bringing it to South Africa is aimed at connecting rural areas that are left out of the fiber rollout. So Starlink uses satellites to beam high-speed broadband internet down to receivers. So that's going to be quite a game changer for a lot of people if you're on the outskirts of the country to be able to still have high-speed internet, which we know now is just a norm more than ever.
That's what I thought it was, but I wasn't sure. Mm-hmm. So that's obviously good news. Is it going to be cheaper? Is it going to be available to people all over the country? Does it mean that we won't have any people in South Africa who aren't connected to the internet?
Well, for now, these are still details that are just proposed. We know how with plans like this, they might finish sooner, they might roll it out and delay some more. But with the intention of being ready in 2022, they have pegged the cost at $99, which is roughly about 1,400 rands.
All right.
And that's a deposit fee and also the equipment that you need. They don't exactly specify what equipment that is, but when it includes satellites out in space, what do you need here to connect to that? I don't know.
You'll need a receiver. So it's probably not a complicated piece of equipment. Apparently, according to Bruce, Starlink have over 1,000 low orbit satellites aiming for 5,000 before the end of the year, and $99 a month. So really interesting.
Yeah, as of right now, mid-April 2021, they have more than 1,400 that are launched. And they are, before they get to South Africa, they're currently rolling out in the US, Canada, the UK, Germany, Poland, New Zealand, and Australia. Okay. So, you know, we aren't too far off. They're looking at Nigeria being the first country in Africa to gain access to Starlink, and then we'll follow slowly after that.
Very good. Leanne is also, in the spirit of us learning new things this morning, like Starlink and sexsomnia. What is CHEGG? CHEGG. And why do we need to know what this is? CHEGG. Never heard of it. Leanne, we can't hear you for some reason. I think you've muted yourself.
Do you know what CHEGG is, or the verb CHEGGing?
No.
Have you heard of it?
No.
Sia?
No idea. Mm-mm. What is it?
So there's a company.
Doesn't sound right to me. No, I haven't.
There's a company called CHEGG, which has tripled their stock price during the pandemic by offering students a way to cheat through virtual studying.
Oh,
which
clever.
Universities across South Africa have actually picked up as an issue.
Okay.
So it's already been picked up as an issue at UCT and WITS, reporting issues with students cheating using CHEGG.
All right.
So the way that it works is, and by the way, they're now a $12 billion company.
Wow.
Who've been profiting from enabling students to cheat.
Okay.
So the way it works is CHEGG has a database of 46 million textbook and exam problems. and allows users to turn them in as their own. So basically to cheat.
Right. I like this.
So it's a Californian-based company. The heart of the operation is in India. And more than 70,000 experts in India are employed there. And they have advanced maths, science, technology, and engineering degrees.
So you'll get some smart kid in India to do your exam for you or your paper, and then you'll hand it in. And they won't know.
Well, these aren't kids. These are adults with degrees. They're like qualified engineers. Brilliant. And that sort of thing.
Brilliant. Well, I is because we are finding ways to – all people want is credentialism. They just want to be able to say, here's my piece of paper. People prove that, you know, I'm smart. I can do this stuff. And I think that, again, I'm going to talk about something that I spoke to Pumi about yesterday on the show. There are things that are more important than an academic education. There are a lot of things that are more important than that. Attitude, personality, character. And I think those things are the things that people hire on. And I think universities increasingly are going to become redundant. They're big white elephants that are in people's heads are far more important than they really are. So this is just another nail in the coffin of university. And well done to the people who developed Chegg. I mean, what's it worth? You said some, how many million?
I can't remember. 12 billion.
12 billion.
Yeah.
Amazing. Amazing. Good for them. Very, very good.
So, yeah, I don't know how it technically works, but...
I love it.
Yeah. So Chegg itself now is attempting to combat cheating. Ugh. You know, they're admitting that this is a problem. It wasn't what they set out to do. So now they're trying to deter people from doing that. But so if it's made them all that money.
Think about it this way. All right. So, I mean, apart from obviously subjects where you need to do practicals, like, you know, in engineering or medicine or in the sciences, I understand that those are probably the things that you will still need a qualification in from a university. But the humanities, even the business sciences, law, these are things you can study if you have a phone. You don't need all that stuff. And you don't need to pay those exorbitant fees. You might not even need the lecturers, frankly. You could probably find, you know, someone in India or China who's already done the degree. If they speak good enough English and they charge you less than the university would, you could probably do it that way. I don't see why not. Obviously, I mean, Carl says, I hope I don't have a heart transplant from a Chegg doctor. Obviously, it would be a problem.
Yeah.
But yes, I do think that mostly universities have, certainly in the humanities and in some of the other faculties, they no longer have the usefulness and the utility that they once did. People used to go to university to learn how to think, not to learn what to think. Unfortunately, now a lot of people go to university to learn what to think, and that's not useful. You know, you could learn philosophy anywhere. And do you really need a degree to prove that you studied philosophy? Does anyone care if you've got a master's in philosophy? I hate to say it, but I've never seen anyone secure a home loan on the basis of a philosophy master's.
No, so it still has an impact, and I'm not denying that it's dying out, but it still has an impact when you look at things like financial advisor. In order to fill out this assessment, put in my highest, qualification. Also, I'm always in the process of hustling and looking for side hustlings and more freelance jobs. And the one proofreading job I've applied for in the US needs to know your exact degree. I actually had to dig out my physical printed out degree certificate. Mm-hmm. And scan it the other day, which I haven't done since I put together a printed CV when I was 16.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose I would have needed to be 21.
I think there's something wrong with people giving a financial assessment to somebody who has a degree and making it different to someone whose financial assessment only has matric. I don't think that the person who only has a matric is in any way less responsible with money. It, I mean, obviously, on an individual basis.
It doesn't work like that. It depends on what products you're using out of a company's portfolio. For instance, insurance and life insurance and those sorts of things. You know, for instance, your age is taken into account, and that'll depend on how much car insurance you pay. Okay.
Fair enough.
It's just one of those. Yeah, it's one of those.
I think having a university degree is not necessarily an estimation of someone's value anymore. It might well have been once. I don't think it's that way anymore. I just don't think it necessarily.
Look, Gareth, I agree with you, but I think we are probably in the minority. For a lot of other people out there, you know, who even before they go in for an interview, a job interview, or deal with the HR of a specific company, or perhaps even, what are they called? The agents, the job agents who filter.
Yeah, the recruitment companies.
Who filter through applications. You're now just dealing with a website and you have to tick certain boxes.
Well, maybe
before they even see your capabilities.
Maybe I'm just saying that because
trustworthy you are.
Maybe I'm just saying that because anybody who was ever stupid enough to employ me would only have to listen to 5 minutes of this show and know that I was not a good candidate. So I'm already screwed.
Don't put yourself down in that way. You know what? I agree with both of you.
All right. Oh, Sia, that's really not that funny. Sia loves the worst jokes on the show. Review Sickle says, "Happy Friday, guys. I spend my week on paternity leave with my new baby daughter." Oh, nice. Congratulations. Ooh,
how much sleep have you had? Sure.
Well, that
what is paternity if we assume Review Sickle is in South Africa? A week? 5 days?
I'm not sure how long
you've been. It's longer. My cousin who's male recently had it. I think it's almost 3 weeks.
Better than quarantine.
Quite good in South Africa.
Surprised by that.
That's better than quarantine. Okay, so remember I said those friends of mine were going to have a baby, and they did on Wednesday last week, and everybody's very excited. And then he sent this picture of his new little daughter, and you know how parents are for that. For most of the child's life, you're going to be obsessed and besotted. But it's really sweet to see. And for those people who were listening to the show two weeks ago, maybe a bit more, when I said that we were waiting for this kid to come, it eventually arrived. So congrats to Greg and Jade on their little baby. And it's a little baby girl, which is awesome. All right. Well, we have none other than George Meany on the show now. How are you doing, George?
Good on you, Gareth.
Very good.
Very, very well.
I always like to see George on the show because it means that Friday has come and we can finally start enjoying our weekend. So, George, what have you got for us this morning?
Gareth, I don't know if you've ever thought about it, but you've been to other countries, no doubt, and different countries drive on different sides of the road.
I've only been to Lesotho and Swaziland, so I don't know.
Well, and in America, they drive on the right-hand side of the road.
That's right. Correct.
I wonder if you've ever wondered why we drive on different sides of the road around the world.
I know why the French and the British drive on opposite sides of the road. And that may be the template for which the other countries get to decide. So what happened when marching armies in the Middle Ages would march past each other, and let's say, you know, they declared an amnesty or whatever. What happened was that you had lances and you had people on horses and their weapons are on one side and the other army, which was going in the opposite direction, had to have their weapons on the other side. Otherwise, the weapons would clash and also the armies would then find reasons to continue to fight. So isn't that the basic reason? The French used to have their lances off to the left, the English off to the right, so that they could march past each other without having to get in each other's way.
That is exactly right.
Wow.
Then it progressed after a while. So what Gareth is saying is spot on. Why do the Americans drive on the right? So the British,
because they're right wing fascists.
Okay. So part of the reason that the British are on the left, and we're on the left, is because the British, exactly as Gareth put it, the chariots would have they colonized us because the chariots would have to control the horse with your left hand and your strong hand. 90% of people, if you Google this, 90% of people in the world are right-handed and control the lances and the swords with their right hand. But it goes further than that. There is a weird story within all of this, and that Napoleon was left-handed. Okay, so Napoleon's tactic, and this speaks right into what Gareth was saying, and I'm glad he said it. We didn't coordinate this. Napoleon's tactic was to actually confuse his enemy by putting his lance and his sword in his left hand, because he was left-handed and controlling the horse from the right-hand side of the chariot.
Mm-hmm.
So Britain and France brought their driving...
In his case, not a chariot, but on horseback, you'd have the bridle in his right hand.
In his right hand and his sword in his left hand. So then, you fast forward a little bit to when cars were starting to be produced. And so how do they make this decision? Well, they looked at the furrows in the ground in Europe and in Britain, and the furrows in the ground suggested that the chariot was on the left-hand side of the road, because the furrows on the left-hand side were actually deeper than the furrows on the right-hand side.
That requires quite a lot of myth-busting type science, but I'll take your word for it. Okay.
Well, I mean, this is what I'm researching. So it suggests that the chariot or the wagon was a little bit heavier on the left-hand side of those furrows. But then you've got to answer the question, well, why does South Africa drive on the left? And you pointed it out, is because of colonialism. And 65% of countries actually drive on the right-hand side of the road, not the left-hand side of the road. So why do Americans drive on the right-hand side of the road? And it turns out that American history follows a little bit of a different path than chariots and fighting. And it was more about cargo hauling than it was about fighting. So when they hauled cargo with the wagons back then, it was easier to control a whole string of horses with your right hand than what it was to control a string of horses with your left hand.
Wow. So that's interesting.
And so the Americans ended up on the right-hand side of the road. And then you've got to ask yourself, well, why do places like Australia and other islands drive on the opposite side of the road? And that's because they don't have neighbors. So they don't have an incentive to change the side of the road. Whereas most countries in Europe that were driving on the right-hand side and others on the left-hand side changed because they had neighboring countries that would have to drive across the border. So they changed the side of the road that they could drive on.
Well,
it's a little bit of history on driving.
Lenise says, in South Africa, you drive on what's left of the roads. That's a very good point. Lenise is our winner for the day. That's fantastic.
But here's an interesting question, Lenise. Which side of the road is safer? And that's the point I was getting to.
Do you want to guess this one, Leanne? You seem to know a lot about what's safer.
All I know is that it's unsafe to drive a left-hand driving car on the wrong side of the road.
Absolutely. I've never tried. I don't want to try. But it turns out that your dominant side, which is whichever side you write with, if you're right-handed, 90% of the world is right-handed, your dominant side is your right eye. Okay. And left-hand side of the road, it turns out, is the safer side of the road to drive because you see the oncoming traffic in your visual spectrum than if you drove on the right-hand side. Not only that, controlling the steering wheel with your right hand in a left-hand drive country is a lot safer because the menial tasks like changing gears, putting on an indicator, all those things are then done with the weaker
hand. Yes.
So
makes sense to me.
You basically need your strong hand for the steering wheel.
Exactly.
Use a strong hand, child.
What a bunch of children.
My germs.
So my final comment on this is, why then?
Hang on, Sia's having an apoplexy. Just hang on. Sia's loving this. Oh, scary movie. What a great movie. Look at him. He's breaking down. Wait. Sia, start again. What did you...
Sorry, George.
Don't worry. You carry on with no effort.
He had like two strands of hair, but it always.
Use my strong attack.
Well, at least, you know, when you've got your left hand free, you can fix your hair, do your makeup, and all those things.
Okay. I'm sorry.
What a stupid movie.
I need to watch that this weekend.
I love that movie so much. I'm with Sia. I'm going to watch that. Fuck it. That's such a great movie. And do you remember they're sitting in the movie theater and she says, "What is this movie?" And he goes, "I don't know." She goes, "Shakespeare in Love?" So good. Those Wayans brothers are genius people. All right, sorry, George. So you were trying to teach us something and we've become children.
We're all children, yeah. What do you mean? So you got to kind of then apply your mind to the fact that South Africa drives on the safer side of the road, and most of the world drives on the unsafe side of the world, the side of the road.
Right.
And so then you've got to ask yourself the question: so why the hell are we in the top ranked countries in road accidents?
Because we drink and drive, because our roads are a fuck up, and because we drive funny distances. We've got strange traffic operations. There are too many cars per
unroadworthy cars.
We have taxis,
drunk pedestrians, wayward pedestrians.
Any of the above? I mean, just all of those are factors, right, George? But you could probably give us the straightforward answer.
Oh, exactly, and that leads me straight into the next story, and that is Easter road deaths.
Oof.
So Easter road death toll was down by about 10% versus 2019. We can't count 2020 because nobody was going anywhere. So versus 2019, Easter road deaths were actually down. But during the 336 roadblocks over the Easter weekend recently, more than 178 vehicles were stopped and checked, issuing more than 32,000 fines, over 800 discontinuation of vehicles, and impounding of more than 780 vehicles. But listen to this. More than 438 motorists were arrested for driving under the influence, and 140 motorists were arrested for speeding and reckless driving. But what I can't understand is, you're going on an Easter holiday.
Yeah.
Why would you drink and drive?
It's pretty wild. I think we've got to own up to the fact that we are not very responsible drivers in this country. You could put any kinds of rules in place. You could put any kinds of technology in place. I mean, if we had electric cars, we'd probably find a way of screwing that up as well in South Africa. We're just really crappy on the roads. And I speak for myself here. I mean, there are lots of people who won't drive with me because they think I drive very badly. I have improved. I know, Leanne, I know. I have improved. But, you know, if I think back to the number of chances I used to take, because I drove drunk a couple of times when I was in my 20s because we didn't have Uber or whatever. And I took chances, man. I go cold when I think about the risky behavior on the roads that I indulged in. And I think many people did. I mean, there's no excuse for it. I'm embarrassed about it now, and I'm lucky I'm alive.
Exactly right. So, you know, we need to get our act together. So that's a bit of a doom and gloom story. But, you know, feeding into what you're saying about, electric cars, and we just had the recent R1 per liter fuel price increase.
Yeah, that's a horrible story. Talk about, I mean, the Easter death tolls is one thing, but this is, for most people, this is just a step too far. And when we talked about this on the show the other day, I mentioned that obviously this hits poor people the hardest. And you've already told us, George, that more than half of that is government money. More than half of the tank that you pay for, you're actually paying straight to government.
Exactly. So how do you not pay that tax? And that's what I'm going to tell you, more of a positive story.
Okay.
How do you not pay that tax? Well, so what we did was we did some research on what are the top 10 most fuel efficient cars in South Africa.
Okay.
And it turns out that they're not the little runarounds that you may think they are. And we were very surprised at this list. So Range Rover Evoque P300. Most of these on this list are actually hybrids. Talking about electric cars. Range Rover Evoque P300E are dynamic, does 1.9 liters, drinks 1.9 liters of fuel per 100 kilometers. Now, on average, to put that in perspective, good. Most cars do around 10 liters per 100
that's
kilometers.
That's amazing, yeah. So that's a 10th. So,
almost a tenth of the fuel consumption of a regular runaround, even your i10. The Jaguar E-Pace, which uses 2 liters per 100. The Volvo XC90, which I had the other day, beautiful car, 2.1 liters per 100 kilometers. And here's another one, a Porsche. You wouldn't imagine this, but the Porsche Panamera E-Hybrid, 2.2 liters per 100. The Range Rover Vela, 2.3 liters per 100. BMW X5 45e, 2.5 liters per 100. And the Range Rover Sport, 2.8 liters per 100. And the list goes on. And there's another one, which is the Porsche Cayenne E-Hybrid, 3.4 liters per 100. And that's a very quick car.
That's fantastic. Hmm. Fantastic. I didn't even know that.
I have a question on the
fuel consumption down like that. That's great.
Sadly, these cars are in the very, very expensive category. Doesn't help our challenge, Gareth, with those living with the lower incomes.
And ironically, governments still take a huge customs and excise duty on most of these cars as well. So you end up paying them the tax through another route. You just can't win with government. They're so greedy. Leanne, you had a question?
So remember the student days when we tried to make our petrol last as long as we could?
Yes.
And one of the things, or even nowadays, if you're running out of petrol and you're on your way to somewhere and you think, how can I save petrol? Mm-hmm. One of the things that I used to do, and I knew a lot of people who did, is we would put our car in neutral as much as possible so that it wasn't – and apparently that's not the way to go. Apparently that still uses up fuel.
Correct. Rather freewheel. You're rather freewheel, right, George? Because neutral, you're still using petrol.
Well, even if your car's idling, you're using fuel. You're more than likely, if you're going downhill and your car is in neutral, you're more than likely using less fuel than when you're pushing the car forward using the accelerator. But remember, when your foot is off the fuel on a downhill, even if you're not in neutral, your car's fuel lines are still shut off. So it makes very little difference.
So whether you're in fifth gear going down a hill or maybe in third, or you've got it in neutral, there's not much difference.
Not going to be much difference because your foot is off the accelerator pedal, which means that the fuel lines are shut off. And maybe you could get some benefit out of some of the momentum because the car's not acting against its own, own resistance. So there's probably a little bit of a benefit, but I wouldn't imagine that there's a massive benefit. The other problem with putting your car in neutral is it's unsafe.
Yeah.
Because if you have to get out of a tight spot very quickly, you've got no power to get anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good point.
Also, you know, instead of being in third gear going down a steep hill or in fourth, say, you might not be able to stop as quickly if you'd just been freewheeling down.
The engine helps you come to a stop as well.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Anything else?
No. Just one little thing, I suppose, and that is came across this little story that Domino's Pizza has launched a real-world test in Woodland Heights in Houston, Texas, with a Neuro R2 robot to deliver food, which is nice to see. So from the Domino's Pizza website, the company sends you a text and a pin, and you are able to track your robot to your location.
Very good. I mean, listen, I can't wait for these drones to deliver food and stuff because it'll take up less space on the roads. And I think it'll get to you faster.
Exactly.
Soon we'll have, you know, you'll look up and you'll see like lines of drone traffic over your head. I think that's cool. I'm looking forward to that time. All right, George Meany, if you want to follow him on social media, you can just Google George and you will find George Meany, M-I-E-N-I-E. And you will be able to find him on all your favorite social media platforms. That's if you want to find out more about any of the stories this morning. And he also has a regular show on cliffcentral.com, which you can catch on Monday. Very good. Thank you, George. Thank you, Sia. Thank you, Leanne. Most especially, thank you to you for joining us. It would be very sad and pathetic if it was, you know, just the four of us doing the show and nobody was listening or watching. So I'm delighted that you could join us this morning. Have an awesome weekend. And we will see you on Monday at 6 a.m.
CliffCentral.com